B3. Number 13A.
All right. We proceed with the 11th chapter. Some objections answered. It is a short chapter, but that chapter has quite a lot of references in it. It's therefore a very living and life chapter in regard to healing. And what she wants to bring out in this chapter is actually that after the 10th chapter has been showing that we can learn the system of healing, that we can be instructed in that system, but then she says, but be careful that this is not a theoretical Christianity, but that it is a practical Christianity. And she starts right in with that chapter that the purpose of this chapter is to show how we should elevate theoretical to a practical Christianity, which means that practical Christianity is the healing practice, and that actually only this very fact of making the learning process a living process makes us a Christian. It's a great chapter to show that only really the Christian can heal. Naturally, with Christian, she means those who have the Christ spirit, not those who have been baptized as a Christian, but that the Christian spirit, the Christian mentality, is that which has a healing effect. She will therefore in this chapter depict what constitutes the quality of a Christian. She will also show that what qualities do not consist a Christian, or what qualities are a non-Christian. And then, as a third, she shows that actually everyone could be a Christian, no matter who it is, that all, therefore, should be able to heal. It is that which shows that what you have been asking, I don't know what if it was yesterday or when, that the new practice is that we should see that everyone is his own practitioner and that all should learn the healing practice. So let us see how she depicts these qualities. I first give you a list of those Christian qualities which heal. She speaks here really first of the gospel healing, meaning the Christian healing, then of the apostolic divine healing. So you have gospel healing, apostolic divine healing, then to grow into the stature of manhood in Christ Jesus heals, to grow into the stature of manhood in Christ Jesus heals. It says it is the living, palpitating presence of Christ's truth which heals. Can you see again the Christ attitude? It is the spirit rule of Christian healing. And Jesus healed on the basis of his spirituality. These are indications that it is the Christ spirit that actually is necessary to elevate the theoretical Christianity to a practical Christianity. Whereas she indicates that if one does not have those Christian qualities, that as a non-Christian we cannot heal. So let's see, the non-Christian is not just somebody who has not been baptized as a Christ. It means the non-Christian attitude, naturally. Therefore, she said, the Israelites did not sufficiently understand God, and so they could not heal. The half-hidden Israelitish history is devoid of healing power. So all the history of the Bible and the good knowledge of the history of the Bible and all that is actually not that which gives us healing power. It's just an interesting subject, just as one could learn everything about the beetle or about bees or anything like that. You can know everything and anything about it, but it doesn't really do the trick. So she says the Orthodox churches cannot heal, you see. They have not the living, palpitating presence of the Christ. It has become a ritual religion. Christian opponents of Christian Science cannot heal. There is a lot of talking and arguing against Christian Science and so on. Very intelligent discussions and argumentations going on about anything and about everything in religion. But what does it do? Has it the effect that it elevates their religion to a practical Christianity or not? This is the great question mark. That's I think you would call it the $64 question. She says that inconsistency in Christianly scientific methods evince no spiritual power to heal. This is a very interesting statement. If we are inconsistent in the scientific methods, that's what we have seen where we started out, that we said if we are not consistent in choosing the right theory for the right practice, then even a theory that is right by itself may be wrong because it's applied to the false situation. We apply addition when we should apply subtraction, so addition and the knowledge of addition doesn't do anything when we need subtraction. So this is here again indicated. He says that popular religion declines systematic healing power. Popular religion. Clergymen cannot heal. Can you hear a whole list of first Christian qualities, then non-Christian qualities? We didn't have that in any other chapter. It is that which stands out here and therefore indicates the necessity here of seeing that only if we wed the letter with the spirit, only then when we wed theoretical Christianity actually with the Christ spirit of it as a life devotion, that only then this becomes a spiritual power. But in order to show that we have not just two categories in humanity, the ones are Christians and the other are non-Christians, she then shows that everyone can be and have that Christian quality, that Christian spirit, and that actually her proposition is that everyone should have that truth spirit. So she is showing that Christianity demands that all do heal with science. She said the apostle, not only Jesus healed, but the apostles healed. Besides the apostle Paul, who was not Jesus' disciple, healed. But Jesus gave the command to heal to his 12 disciples. He also gave that same command to the 70 that he sent out. Finally, she ask that the whole world should investigate Christian Science and its method of healing so that all who understand truth should heal. She builds up the subject so that she takes it away from a denominational sense of religion and says actually it is not the Christian as a person, but the Christian spirit, which everybody can have, that is, that heals. Isn't it completely different again? And isn't it nice to see that the 10th chapter had to precede, where she said there is a possibility to instruct everyone and to teach everyone, and everyone can learn it, but then in objections answered, she shows that it needs that Christ spirit to elevate theoretical Christianity to practical Christianity. So we could perhaps epitomize this 11th chapter, elevating theoretical to practical Christianity. Elevating a theoretical to a practical Christianity. What does that mean? Perhaps you state in the bracket what that means, namely by putting on Christ-likeness. That's by putting on Christ-likeness we can heal. By putting on Christ-likeness we can heal. Chapter 10, we had, yes, I think so, huh? No? About the epitome. I wanted to say there, as an epitome of chapter 10, I see that some have it. Understanding the scientific idea heals, huh? Even you could say learning to understand, huh? The scientific idea which heals. All right. Now we come to that big chapter, Christian Science Practice, which naturally deals especially with healing. And so it will be interesting to see what is the place value of this chapter. When every chapter of the textbook is speaking about healing, so now we will have to see what is now the specific aspect here. And so we are quite curious what Mrs. Eddy would say here. Now, from last year you know that this chapter has four parts, and they are two very distinct four parts, and I have asked you as a preparation to study this chapter in conjunction with the tapes that we have made last year on this chapter. The first part, here, where Mrs. Eddy describes the attitude of the practitioner, the quality, so to say, which the practitioner has to incorporate, has to possess, we see that here she says that which heals are actually the loving affections that are necessary. That without this attitude of love towards the case, towards the patient, we cannot really heal by the Spirit. So here, she does not say that it is a question of thinking, how the practitioner is thinking and what he's thinking. Before he starts thinking in the second part, in the first part, she depicts first the whole quality, the Christian quality of a practitioner, with a high accent really on his loving attitude towards the case, not towards error, but towards the case. For instance, she would say that what is necessary to heal is sympathy with the sick, would do much towards healing. The benign thought would heal the sick. See, the benign thought, the unselfish affection heals. She says we should reach the patient through divine love. Again, she says spiritual affection confers healing power. The tender word, the Christian encouragement, the pitiful patience. Do you hear those qualities? These are the qualities which Mrs. Eddy shows here in that part, on that first part, and shows this heals. You see, something very different than, say, in the 10th chapter, in the 6th chapter, when she says, truth heals through mind. See, there it was, the synonymous term, that heals through mind. Here at this point, we naturally are in Christianity, And she would now depict, well, the whole divine scientific consciousness that the practitioner must have. She compares that with the false attitude and speaks that hypocrisy, stolidity, inhumanity, vice, spiritual barrenness, bearing the letter in the morale of the subject, do not heal, that they have no healing power. So you have a whole list of counterfeit qualities, of which she says that if that enters into the practice, that that weakens the healing power. So we have here a very distinct tone on healing. So perhaps in our little box there for the 12th chapter, perhaps we do well if we make four epitomes, each one for those four parts, so that we can distinguish them. Perhaps you write a bit in small writing so that you have enough room to put it in. Think therefore in point one, Roman one, we could say loving affections are necessary in order to heal. Loving affections are necessary in order to heal by the Spirit. Yes. I don't know what it does to you. It thrills me. It thrills me, really. I see beauty and art in these kind of analyses. Here I see beauty. You know, the distinction, how finely distinct this part is now from the rest of all the other chapters, and begins to see how neatly and beautifully this part within the whole is now outlined and identified. There's nothing in here which we had seen or got in any other chapter. All right, we go to the second part, and perhaps you remember that when we did that 12th chapter, that second part, which we had in a second column last year, we were saying in this second part, it is shown the truth that the practitioner has to know, truth and mind. You remember? The truth that the practitioner has to know, that we had last year in that second part. And here again we find the same attitudes towards healing, that therefore healing consists in establishing the truth in the minds of mortals. Establishing the truth in the minds of mortals, truth and mind. Naturally, we must see that that truth now, establishing the truth, is not the same truth as Quimby would establish in the minds of the patient, because now establishing the truth means that through the whole Christ vertical, those four chapters, we have seen the divine truth, that truth which is God, and not just the truth that we think is true. She says here, in order to heal, that we must have faith in the truth of being. So we ground ourselves in the truth of being. She says, establish the scientific sense of health, and it heals. Establishing again the scientific sense of health, it's again establishing the truth of health, and it heals. She says, healing should be done through the action of truth on the minds of mortals. Therefore, one begins to see here the truth that is true about the patient. See, that's truth, and establishing that as the mind of the patient. It is therefore different than truth and mind, which we had in the Christ vertical, Then the Christ vertical, we had truth healing through mind, but their mind was the medicine of mind, you see, the medium through which we heal. Here in healing, it is establishing the truth in the minds of mortal to see that that truth is the fact of the patient's consciousness. This is something different. So we must be careful that when we use a synonymous term, that we know which aspect of that synonymous term is under consideration. I'm not quite sure, the way you look at me, that you got it. No, you didn't get it. That's fine. So I will leave it and we'll come back to it tonight or tomorrow when we summarize it. So she shows in that second part, you see, that what is the healing method or the healing attitude of the practitioner, that he knows the truth about the patient and therefore establish as the mind of the patient that truth. And this naturally is contrary to believing in disease and its evidence, therefore accepting the error. She says that we should not make reality of disease, or we cannot heal it. We do not establish the truth of it if we accept the reality of disease, so we cannot heal it. When the belief goes, healing takes place. When the belief goes, when does the belief go? She says, when we establish the truth in the patient's mind. When we see that the patient can have no other mind than the truth. That's establishing the truth in the patient's mind. When we see that the patient is an idea of mind, he is not the mortal, but an idea of mind, and establish the truth in the patient's mind and see that the patient is not the person, but is the idea of mind which knows truth, which knows the whole health, the whole truth about himself. All right, so let's epitomize it as Roman 2 and see that here we have establish truth, capital T, establish truth in the mind, small m, of the patient. Establish the truth in the minds of the patient. Because we cannot establish truth in divine mind, because the divine mind is anyway truth. We don't have to establish it. So the practice is that we establish that which is the absolute truth and see that that is the truth about which the patient alone can be conscious. In order to do that, we have to use the method of practice. Here we come to the third part. You remember when we did the 12th chapter last year, the third part had that tone of the method that the practitioner is using. And here, in regard to healing disease, she gives an enormous lot of rules that have to be obeyed and can be obeyed in order that we can refute error with spiritual understanding. It's all through that those pages go dozens. By the dozens, she gives those rules how to refute error with spiritual understanding. She does not just show that what is needed is spiritual understanding, because that she has shown, so to say, in the second part, namely establishing the truth in the minds of mortals. Now she says, yes, that's fine, you heal with that spiritual understanding, that's from where you go out, but in order to do that, you also have to say nay, nay, not only yea, yea. And here, in this second part, it's all about the yea, yea and the nay, nay, which the practitioner uses in his treatment. Let's first take the yea that she gives here. She speaks about healing through spiritual understanding. How? And you have the yea of your inner attitude. She says we must have faith in God heals, faith in the truth of being heals. Give understanding to efface the images of sickness. Understanding is the universal remedy. The Bible contains the recipe for this healing. Contend for the truth in order to heal. You see, it's the yea, the affirmation of the truth. Then she gives all the nay-nay.